Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of The Boundless Show. Very pleased to be with you as we are in spring, which is my third favorite season of the year.
Third favorite?
It's my third favorite. Oh, I just thought I had to announce that. I'm not even going to tell you what my first and second are. You have to listen to future shows to find out. But we have a great show for you this week. Later on in the show, the inbox question will be answered by Chris Vaya of the Focus Leadership Institute, a great guy who has lots of great insight. And he's going to be talking about pledging Greek. So if you don't even know what that means, maybe... Martha and I were like, what was that?
Does that mean like making a reservation at a Greek restaurant?
It could be. It's all Greek to me.
It's about putting together a gyro and just gobbling it down.
No, we
will find out what that means, basically, in the inbox section. And then in our culture segment, I will be talking to Zorro, who is the drummer for Lenny Kravitz, in addition to other major artists, a fun guy who basically drums, and he, I'm not going to lie, he gave Martha and I drumsticks and signed them. So this is the kind of thing that you discover and that you benefit from when you are part of Boundless.
Where was I for that interview?
I am going to be telling my children for the rest of my life that I opened up for Lenny Kravitz.
There you go.
It's true.
And he had an awesome fedora on, and you will see his photo there on the blog because he's fantastic. He and I just chilling there together, Zorro. So anyway, love him. But here we are, speaking of a guy who has an awesome job. We're going to talk about our quote-unquote jobs, but kind of a bigger picture element of that. And that's kind of like the discussion of calling and where God has us and where he's taking us and how we can reconcile ourselves to enjoying the journey in that process. So with me today, I have Martha Kranke. Not sure if you know her. Hey, Martha.
Hello, Lisa. It's been a while, so.
I know. You decided to come behind the mic today.
Yes. We'll give it a shot.
It's very good. She's going to say awesome things about her current job. I can tell you that. So
totally we also out her calling.
Exactly. We also have the wonderful and very colorful today, Carrie Kintz.
Oh, thank you. Great, yeah, I kind of look like an Easter egg.
You do. That's so
I'm very
exciting.
Pink today.
Actually, between the three of us, we're doing well.
We are.
Sam Hoover, not so much.
No.
Working the neutrals over there.
Yes.
Rocking
you're the
plaid.
You're the inside
like
of the egg.
Like a madman. Madman.
Yeah.
No.
Don Draper.
No.
Sam Draper.
Stop.
Well, we appreciate you guys for being here and being part of this conversation this week. So this topic was actually birthed by Carrie and Sam. So I can say birthed if I want.
Out of 9 months of agonizing.
Exactly. And they were very passionate about talking about this. So obviously something is going on in their own heads and hearts as they work their jobs. You know, Sam was here for our show where we talked about social media because he is a social media guru and that is his day job, which, let's be honest, 10 years ago would not have existed.
So yeah.
You're just lucky you're even here.
Well, I am very lucky to be not only at Focus, but here in the studio with you three lovely ladies. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
We acknowledge that. That's
Thank
good.
You very much.
That's good. Well, we want to talk about, okay, here's my thing, and I'm just, you know, so I'm old, I'm aging, and so I have talked before on the show about these crazy young kids and how they get out of college and they immediately think they're going to be consultants because they just want to be awesome and they want to make a lot of money and they don't want to sit at a desk from 8 to 5. So that is some people's dream, and that just is what they work towards. Mm-hmm. But we want to talk about something bigger, and we want to talk about how God can use your gifts and your strengths right where you are and how you may have opportunities before you that you may not even yet know of in light of what your current job situation is. And quite frankly, how you may take a job that you think is a dog and it may ultimately be a very growing experience for you and lead to something else. Mm-hmm. That is not what Martha's going to talk about. So I'm just feeding Martha all her potential lives.
I don't need to say anything.
I'm so glad you're here, Martha.
I'll be filling in for both myself and Martha in this portion of the podcast. But you guys talk a little bit about this. Why don't you share the vision for really what this means and why it's something that you are now grappling with. It's part of your story.
Yeah, I think the whole reaching your calling, fulfilling your calling, mm-hmm. idea. It's kind of a misnomer. You mentioned about college graduates and coming right out of college and just jumping headfirst into what the Lord has for you. And my first job out of college, I worked at a wildlife museum taking tickets. And yeah, right? Not really making the big bucks, not even really putting my degree to any use whatsoever. But I learned in that job, I learned what it's like to wake up at 6:30 every single morning, because I didn't do that in college. Imagine that. I learned those responsibilities of
being timeliness.
Yeah, timeliness, being faithful to your job and being faithful to your employer and being trustworthy. And those were attributes that I took from that job, that I learned from that job, that I've been able to apply to every other job since then.
Yeah, I think to kind of piggyback on what Sam was saying, I didn't actually go to college. And so I entered the workforce almost straight after graduating from high school. And my first real job was actually here at Focus. I started at Focus 11 and a half years ago. So I'll let you do the math on how old I am. But I started out as a barista and didn't really think, oh, yeah, I'm going to be working at Focus all of this time and I'm going to grow. But it was just a job at the time. And I didn't have any aspirations about growing within the organization. But I learned how to make a mean cup of coffee. But I mean, even more than that, I learned how to interact with people and how to serve well. And again, like Sam said, take those attributes all the way through the different jobs that I have had here at Focus. And I think that's what's so important. Like you said, Lisa, I think there are a lot of ideas out there that once I graduate college or once I hit this certain career milestone, I am going to bump into and finally fulfill God's call in my life. And we kind of perceive calling as a destination when really, if you read scripture, the life of our faith fathers and mothers and, you know, the Lord himself, it's actually a journey. And I think that's kind of missing from a lot of people in mm-hmm. our generation.
Yeah. And don't you think, too, I mean, I think there's an element of now, especially that we're in the blogosphere and everyone and their brother has a blog. You don't see people that have jobs taking tickets, writing a blog and talking about it every day. Mm-hmm. You see the people that have ended up down in Uganda doing something, building wells or something. So I think people have this impression that unless I'm doing something that's either a rockin' ministry or is pulling in some cash or is leadership in something, then I'm not doing something valuable and I'm not, you know, at pace with where I should be, mm-hmm. you know, for my generation or something. And I think that's so untrue.
Yeah.
Because I mean, straight out of college, I temped. I was the classic liberal arts degree, and I was just like, do you want fries with that? I did not know what I was going to do. I didn't even know who would hire me. I didn't even know what I could do with my degree. I was just like, well, I wrote essays in college, you know, and did that, you know. So I was just all over the map as figuring out, you know, what in the world I could even do. I know, Martha, you were a little more directional than I was.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a different experience of shortly, maybe about a year's time after graduation, I actually got my dream job, the thing that mm-hmm. I went to college for and was hoping to get. But then 4 years later, it was cut. The whole staff was let go and went through a layoff. So it was back to kind of ground zero of what am I going to do with my life? What are my goals and hopes and dreams? And so it's been a discovery process, you know, starting over too.
Which is a good thing to mention, that it's not always going to be this just a systematic ladder of growth and experience. There's going to be stops and starts, and mm-hmm. you're going to have times where the bottom falls out from under you and you're going to have to start over and you have to reassess, where am I now? You know, I did that after really 12 years in the world of PR and then decided to move over here in the world of young adults and running a website, which I didn't know diddly squat about, and still, you know, I'm at about 50% sometimes. So I think that's so true. But what would you say then are, you know, as you think about this topic, what are some of the things that are opportunities that people may miss? Like if someone goes in and they think that they're paid to do a certain job and that's all they're going to do. And, you know, we talk about clock watchers and all these types of people. But what are some great opportunities that people can take in the jobs that they have that can allow them to grow and maybe gain some new skills that aren't being delivered to them on a silver mm-hmm. platter, but are things that they could maybe reach out and grab?
You know, I think people really miss the value of not taking the spotlight, but just doing what's extra, taking the extra mile in your job. I think we have a mentality, I've seen it a lot in our generation and other generations, of I want to be a star and I'm meant to be somebody and I'm called to be somebody. Well, that's all well and good. And yes, God has made you uniquely and wonderfully and he's given you special gifts and talents. But I think we really bank on those things taking us somewhere rather than the blood, sweat, and tears that is really required in a job to be noticed. And I think it's the little things like not trying to be the star, but just doing your best every single day, coming in committed to your job, and then being willing to take that extra step and not to be noticed, but just to say, you know what, I can do this. There's not that much on my plate right now. I'm happy to help out. And being willing to take on that servant attitude, I think, is something that you can really miss, because we're too busy trying to build up a resume or, like I said, be somebody. And scripture, again, is anti to that. It's serve those around you and look for those opportunities, even if it's not glamorous, you know, even if it is answering the phones for somebody at lunch or, you know, being the contact person on an out of office email or whatever it is, something that's not glamorous. I think we want the glamour and the glitz, but we don't want to do the hard work that it takes to sometimes get to a place where you're noticed. And I think that's unfortunate. And I had to go through that, mm-hmm. you know, starting as a barista, you know, and climbing up through Focus, you know, you struggle with that. It's like, I want people to see that I do hard work and I want them to notice me. But at the same time, it's, am I going to be satisfied knowing that I'm doing what God's called me to do and that He notices? And then is that going to be enough for me? And sometimes I was like, no. It's not.
Yeah, well, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. And to add to that point, we've redefine success, that success has to be getting a lot of attention and getting a lot of notoriety, when really success is doing what you're called to do right now.
Mm-hmm. Embracing the gifts that you have been given. Of not everybody is going to be a great blogger. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is going to be a Lisa Anderson hosting the podcast. I mean, I am very good at scheduling and keeping things in line, and that is probably not going to get me the front page story. You know, but embracing those things mm-hmm. is what you'll actually enjoy and be able to succeed in. So mm-hmm. I think identifying those is a good place to start.
Yeah, now. It's the whole body has many parts. And we mm-hmm. all can't be a celebrity blogger with millions of Twitter followers. You know, there's a few select people that can do that. And then there has to be everybody else to fill in the what may look like the void, but is actually what you're supposed to be doing. That's your calling, is what you're supposed to be doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have a lot of people, though, that are fearful coming out of college because, say, for example, they show up out of college with an accounting degree and they're like, here goes the rest of my life sitting in a cubicle with a 10 key and just working with spreadsheets and doing that. You know, and it can be, even though it's something they're good at, maybe it's something they fell into and maybe now they're just like, this is my life and this is going to define me. I want to know what you guys have done in past jobs or current jobs, things that you now know, new skills or new talents that you have because of something crazy that got thrown in your lap and you had to pick it up and you had to realize, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, I actually was able to master that, or maybe not master it, but I can do it now and it's part of my repertoire and it's now an additional caveat to who I am and what I have to offer.
I chose a degree in journalism to do magazines, but bad news, magazines are kind of going down the pits. So I mean, just getting used to the digital world.
Except for Real Simple. I still get that.
Oh,
love
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm. Summer, still living. Yeah. But even to learn HTML, I mean, that's so geeky and nothing I never planned on learning or had any desire to, but I got it and it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. I am a very much a big picture person and I love connecting those dots. And when I was working in the bookstore for Focus, the entire events off sales bookstore got thrown in my lap, which required a lot of attention to detail, which I am horrible at. And just learning how to order and shipping and training volunteers. And it was just definitely not in my skill set. But my boss said, I believe that you can do it. And having that empowerment behind me saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to take this challenge and I'm going to try. This is a definite weakness of mine, but I'm going to do it. And I found that once I really applied myself to it, which I used to hate hearing in school, if you would just apply yourself, it would work. It's true. I actually found that I really enjoyed it. It was essentially like running a small business, which is something I never thought I would be good at. But once I really had the drive and had somebody supporting me, I said, okay, I'm gonna try. And even if I fail, at least I'm going to know that I tried. So, I really enjoyed it. And I did it for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I had a marketing job where I too had a degree in communications, more on the writing side. But so I had a marketing job that required some video work, and I didn't know anything about video. I didn't know anything about editing. That whole process intimidated me because there were a lot of fancy programs that I had to use. And then B, that's what really, really, really cool and good looking people do. Like producers that wear good clothes and has cool hats, and I don't. So I got thrown into this position of having to create these real quick, simple videos for the company I worked for that showed off kind of the behind the scenes areas of it. And I just kind of jumped in and learned, all right, here's the process of pre-production and filming and scripting. And I didn't become good at it. I didn't become great at it, but I knew just enough, I guess, just enough to make myself dangerous. And that's something that I've been able to do here at Focus, and something that Carrie and I do. Mm-hmm. We do a not a behind the scenes, but an internal video for all the employees that, I mean, it's just so much fun. And I would have never, ever been able to do that had I not taken the time years and years ago to learn and really study film making, video making.
I don't know how I ended up on the video. Somebody came to me and said, "You look creative. Mm-hmm. We need to fill this space on our internal website." And I'm like, "Okay, Sam, I need you to help me."
That's great. Yeah, I had never hosted a show prior to the Boundless show. I was told one day by the former team, "Hey, we want to do this podcast. You like to talk and you get up in people's business. Do you want to come down and give it a shot?" And so I did. And so never thought it was something. I mean, certainly plugging away at my liberal arts degree, never thought this was something that I would do. Of course, podcasting wasn't even around at that time. So I think it is interesting how we see just different little things that are made opportunities for us. So that's a great way to maximize things that we have before us. But what about, I know we were talking about this before, just the calling of obedience in what you've been given and what you've been called to do, and what it means to not always expect that what you do is going to make you happy. How do you reconcile that with someone who's looking at a stretch of a job ahead of them and just saying, "Oof, I don't know if I can hack this"?
Yeah, I wonder if working in your strengths and doing the Lord's calling is sometimes it's not fun. Just look at Jesus' life. I mean, he was called to the cross, called to make this huge sacrifice, and what he was doing for the Lord and in love ended up in this great sacrifice and a lot of physical pain. And I think we often think that working in our strengths is going to make everything very happy and very joyful, and that's not necessarily always the case.
Yeah, I think, too, what I love about what Scripture says about Jesus is that the joy that was set before him was, you know, knowing that he was called to the Lord. Like, this was the purpose of his life. And so I think a lot of times we look to our external circumstances to make us happy, and that's not accurate. That's, you know, and it's, we all do it. It's not like, you know, I've mastered, well, nothing outside of me makes me happy, you know. No. But I think it's that focus on the Lord. And in times when I've really struggled with where God's called me and struggled with my job and, you know, been in tears because I'm so frustrated, it's that encouragement to endure, I mean, and to persevere. And I think that those are two words that we kind of look at as curse words, because they do indicate that you're going through something and it's difficult and it's hard. But there is reward in knowing that you are being obedient, and the Lord will bring times of refreshing in the midst of that struggle. And so I would just say to anybody who's in that place of I'm in a job that I don't like and I don't know what to do, is to seek the Lord and to not look at your external circumstances and allow that to dictate whether or not you're going to be obedient to the Lord or not. Because I think a lot of times we do that, and it's hard not to, but he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him, and he does give us joy, and there is contentment to be found in pursuing him in the midst of the struggle. And I think that that's something, again, that we move away from because we think calling is glamorous and it's glitzy, it's all these things. But no, I mean, Scripture is full of examples of people who were absolutely called by God and yet went through very difficult things. But then you read some of the things that they wrote and they are amazing and they're beautiful and they're worshipful. And so I think there's something very precious that comes out of the struggle that we miss when we want to evade it instead of go through it.
Yeah, I think it's important for us to remember, too, that, you know, when we look at people who are quote unquote successful, many of them, I mean, eventually your goal is to hopefully trend in jobs that utilize more of your strengths, that are a better fit, that are mm-hmm. allowing you to stretch yourself and all that. But we had our department not too long ago had an offsite where we had a consultant come in, and he talked about, you know, he's just a big time whatever guy. I don't even know what all he consults in. It's a lot of different things, a lot of management, marketing stuff. And he said the one thing that he hates is going through his numbers and the quotas and the sales that they're responsible for. But he says he has to do it on Monday, and then every Friday he has to do it again. And those are the two bookends of a week that he does not look forward to. He despises that part of his job, but he has managed every other aspect of his job to trend towards things that are his strengths and that mm-hmm. he likes doing. And so no matter how far you climb up the ladder, you're still going to have stuff within your job that you're like, this is not my favorite thing to do. This is not, you know, even rock stars have stinky aspects of their job, I'm mm-hmm. sure. You know, they have to talk to people they don't care about.
Think
they
about
have to
any right now, but
ride on a bus with 13 other people.
Exactly. I don't even know if I would do that on a good day. I don't even know, you know, if I'd be up for that in any stretch. But I do think that is so true. So as you guys like look ahead, you know, when you're looking, because you guys are all, you know, I'm going to throw myself into, you know, we're kind of like younger in our careers. I'm just throwing myself in. You know, we have longer careers ahead of us. We still have many years of working ahead of us. What do you see when you like map that out and see kind of where you may go? Do you have certain hopes or certain fears that you're kind of wrestling with? Or are you going to kind of more take it as it is?
I learned a long time ago not to really look too far into the future mm-hmm. because you just never know what's going to happen. My pastor has a saying that whenever people come to him and asking the question of, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing right now. I don't know what God's calling me to do in this situation. And he says, go back to the last thing that God called you to do and do that. And I feel like that's the part of my life that I'm in right now is I feel like, okay, I don't know what my future has for me, whether it's at here or whether it's anywhere else. But I know that God's called me to here right now. This is the last thing that he's called me to do. And I know I'm supposed to be doing it and do it well. Everything else is going to get taken care of on its own, in its own time.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good motivator too, Sam. You know, your example is someone who's also a husband and a father. And I think that's a great motivator for men to recognize that you're a provider. You know, so you don't have, I mean, not that you can't dream and not that you can't grow in your career or not that you can't, but, you know, it helps you to kind of just take your eyes out of the stars and have these totally unrealistic expectations and ridiculousness of like, well, you know, I'm not going to actually work. I'm just going to write a screenplay and hopefully sell it, you know, somewhere within the next 20 years. Well, that's, you know, something you can do on the side, but it's a little ridiculous for this time and space. So I think it's good to have, you know, your feet, you know, planted, but also to recognize that God is creative and he wants us to grow too. That's good.
My dad told me recently that God does not put us on rabbit trails, that everything really does have a purpose. And we might not see in this lifetime why we had this job picking up trash or whatever that seems so minor to us, but
counting lasagna noodles. That was one of my temp jobs.
You know,
I've done it.
Maybe God wants you to make me some lasagna.
That's very possible.
Being such a great employee.
I need to get a better recipe than the one I have.
But he's got a purpose and direction, and we can put our trust in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think I know for myself, I'm interested in so many things, and I'm passionate about a lot of issues, and I know that the Lord's given me just, you know, a lot of ideas, but at the same time, kind of going back to what Sam was saying and what Martha was saying is, you know, the Lord also said, I've only given you today. And so I need to remind myself to not have both eyes on the future, but to work on what has he called me to today? And am I being faithful in that? And am I loving him well in that? And to, you know, not be looking for opportunities around, you know, every corner, but just being open and just reminding myself that my life is not my own. It really isn't. If I'm fully committed to Jesus and loving him, then my life is not my own, and I'll be a woman under his authority. And so to just hold my life very loosely. And I think a lot of times we get very afraid, and I know that I've done it, of, you know, my life isn't going to turn out the way that I want it to, or am I wasting away at a certain job, or, you know, am I not being utilized right in my church? And when I get that way, I have a tendency to really react in control and say, no, I need to hold on to this, and I need to figure out what this looks like. And the Lord says, no, you need to hold your life loosely. It needs to be mine, and I need to be able to do with it what I want to do. And that's why it's called faith, you know, and that's why without it, it is impossible to please him. And it's just been a journey, because I have definitely had those times where I've just really struggled with where the Lord's placed me, but I've tried my best and, you know, fallen and gotten back up, and there's had to be repentance, but I've watched the Lord honor that in my life and in the lives of others. And so I know that it's true. He's proven himself faithful. And so it's just making sure that I take each step and acknowledge him in that, knowing that, like Sam said, you know, he has my future and he has my present. And so I need to be able to rest in that and be faithful.
All right. Well, these are great thoughts, everyone, and hopefully encouraging to those of you out there, whether you are just starting out in your career, or whether you feel like you're kind of stuck in something dead end, or whether you're just humming along, because we all have, as we described, our bumps and bruises that we're going to have to go through. But looking ahead is a great thing. Also, the emphasis on relationship. I just want to mention mm-hmm. that. Determine to like the people that you work with, because you are spending a lot of time with them, and it's really ridiculous to just concentrate on a task and not care about the people around you. It is not helpful, it's not fun, and it's not even godly. So
Amen.
That's my little rebuke there for some people that didn't even need to hear that. So anyway, thank you all so much for being part of the conversation.
Thanks for having us, Lisa.
Thank you for letting me open for Zorro. Stay tuned.
Well, hello, everyone. And for this week's culture segment, I am privileged to be in studio with Zorro. Zorro, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks Great for to having have you me, here. Lisa. We get to interview some really cool, interesting people here on The Boundless Show. And it's always fun when we hear of folks who are passing through our neighborhood and we try to snag them when they have a good story to tell. Zorro is one of the world's foremost drummers, I would say. And I mean, right up there with Animal from The Muppets, right? Is it the two of you pretty much kind of neck and neck?
No, he's above me.
Oh, yeah.
I only aspire to be as good as Animal.
And I do appreciate the large chain he wears around his neck. You're looking a little subdued today for your craft, but that's okay. We'll let you do that. So, but he has played with the likes of Lenny Kravitz, Bobby Brown, The New Edition, Frankie Valli. I mean, you kind of span a number of different genres of music, as well as age spans, decades, types, venues. Pretty much all of it.
I've been fortunate to play a variety of great music with a variety of great artists, and I enjoy the different styles, and I don't like to be pigeonholed into any one thing. So yeah, it is a broad base of people, but it's just been sort of doors that God opened that allowed me to mingle with a wide variety of people as well.
Yeah, pretty cool. But you're known, now this is interesting to me because I don't know anything about this, you are known primarily or pinnacly as an R&B drummer. If I were to ask you what an R&B drummer is, what is that?
Well, from a musical standpoint, you know, rhythm and blues is known as a real groove-oriented music, mm-hmm. as opposed to very busy, intricate, you know, jazz fusion or something that's very... So, you know, R&B is known for having soul, and having... A drummer would define it as, if you're a great drummer, they would say, man, he's got a great groove or a great pocket. That means mm-hmm. he makes the beat feel fantastic and makes people move, and it's, you know, there's a certain thing that a drummer tries to capture. So, you know, R&B encompasses a lot of what American music is really founded on. It's all founded on different forms of rhythm and blues, you know, mm-hmm. from gospel to soul to jazz to funk, and rock comes out of rhythm and blues. So it's really just a definition of a person who really plays for the music and who really sets the pace for the music and serves the music, because that's what an R&B drummer does. He plays for the song, not for himself.
Okay. And you are referred to, I know, as the minister of groove. So
yeah.
Others have called you that with all of your accolades that you've received. So regularly. I know, documentation said you're consistently voted the number one R&B drummer and educator in Modern Drummer, Drum, and Rhythm magazine. So I have not subscribed to those myself.
Why not?
I know. I don't know why.
Just because you play flute doesn't mean you can't learn about us drummers.
That's right. I need to try more of that percussive flute playing.
Every instrument at the beginning of the day is rhythmic. Mm-hmm. Before it's anything, mm-hmm. all instruments are rhythmic, and then melody flows after that. So
true.
We'll get you a subscription.
I got to get into that. Okay, you started out in L.A. Life began in L.A., and you're one of a number of kids in your family. And I know you talked in, you are the author, I should say this as well, author of The Big Gig, which is quite a book. It's like how many pages are we talking?
440 pages.
Yeah, okay, 440 pages that is really almost a primer. The subtitle is Big Picture Thinking for Success, but really on the music biz and how to be what you define as a sideman, kind of an independent musician, someone who goes out and does gigs, crafts a career out of playing with different artists. But really, it also is so useful just for succeeding in life in general, whether career, whether relationships. I mean, you have a piece kind of on all of those things in here, which I think is pretty cool. But tell us, you got your start in LA, and I know you even had a span of time growing up in Compton, California. Mm-hmm. So this is when the Compton folks who listen give a collective shout out. Hey, folks, good to hear from you. Why drums? How did you get started?
When people ask me, you know, why drums, it's one of those things. It's like, why do we do anything that we do? It was an innate thing that God gave me. It's, you know, when we really flow and do what it is that God created us to do, there is nothing else for us but that, because that's what he put in our DNA. So he created me to be a drummer, amongst other things, but that was something that was given to me. I've done nothing to earn rhythmic talent. I was born with rhythmic talent. I could sense rhythm. I could feel rhythm. Now the difference is I partnered with God with the talent that he gave me. Then I did my part, because I believe that God gives us each a gift, a skill, a talent, which is free. Our gift back to him is what we do with it, what we turn it into, how we cultivate it, and ultimately we'll be judged on how we served with it. Because I won't get a reward when I get to heaven because I was a great drummer, because he's going to go, I know, I gave you that, mm-hmm. but what did you do with it? Mm-hmm. How did you serve me with it? How many people were blessed because you did what you did? How many people were inspired? Or was it all a journey of self? Or was it a journey of service? So to me, I recognized that I had this rhythmic gift and talent, and then I decided to work really hard and labor and really try to take this diamond's worth of potential and let it go through the process to where it can become a diamond that would be obvious to everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I feel that everybody out there listening has that diamond's worth of potential. But if I've did a little studying and research, and I wrote that in the book about like what it takes for a diamond to be made, and the process is a serious process before you finally go through all this tons of mud before you get this one diamond. But something I tell my children too, I said, you know, you don't suddenly, whatever I have has always been there. You don't suddenly have talent at a certain age or whatever. You have what you've always had. Maybe at a certain age you discover it or you have an interest in it, but it's always been there. But most people aren't willing to undergo the process of what it takes for that diamond to really shine. Mm-hmm. And that's just work, and that's labor, and that's retooling and reassessing and, you know, recalibrating every time you're trying to grow to another place. But I was destined to become a drummer because it was in my blood. It's what one of the things God called me to do. Hmm. So I guess you could say I was compelled to do it.
Sure. Okay. So so that's how you encountered drums. And I love the story how you tell about getting your first drum set and you basically thrashed it within the first couple of days.
couple hours.
Thanks for the investment, Mom. But anyway, no, that was great. And you talk a lot about your mom as well. But how then did you encounter Christ? How did that come about?
That came about, my mother was from Mexico City, and my mother grew up Catholic, and my mother had a strong sense of Christ and God and the family from an early age. So I can remember very early on, you know, going to the Catholic Church, and I can remember very early on, even before anybody told me about God, I could feel God's presence. Like at six, I knew there was a God. There was something just innate. It was like, there's a God. After we left California, we moved up to Oregon, and then we began to attend Baptist church churches, and it was in those Baptist churches that I was able to attend some of these summer church camps that a lot of these kids go to. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's for underprivileged kids.
There.
Yeah, you know, you go there for a week, and it's one of those places where, you know, they have a prayer meeting or, you know, two or three times a day, and you're praying eventually that they don't have any more prayer meetings so you could just play and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it was at one of those camps on one of those afternoons that they did an altar call, and the guy gave a message to receive Christ. And I remember walking up there to the Billy Graham song, Just As I Am. And I remember I could see myself at 11 years old, you know, walking up there crying, wanting to receive Christ. And then after that point, my mother would gather us around the television every time Billy Graham was on for a special. She'd say, kids, you know, Billy Graham's on. And every time he gave the altar call, I said it again. I always wanted to keep making sure that I was saved. You know, every mm-hmm. time there was an mm-hmm. opportunity, I was like, yeah, I receive it. You know what I mean? So it's just, I don't know, God was drawing me, you know, from an early age, and it was just a revelation. But at that age is when I like sort of officially remember
mm-hmm.
Making that, you know, verbal commitment.
Hmm. Cool. Well, and it's obvious, you know, I see that kind of those two stories dovetail, and you talk about this a lot in your story, just of how, and you alluded to this earlier, that need for that parallel understanding of what it means to, you know, those themes of perseverance. You talk about networking in the book, responsibility, excellence. And I love how you talk, especially about, you know, work with the drumming, how it wasn't just about, I think there's this misconception out there that, especially in the rock and pop worlds, you know, you just, all you do is you grab a mic and you go up on stage and either you have it or you don't, or you're just, you know, now we see the X Factor and American Idol and all these people that just seem to be born in a minute into stardom. But you really talk a lot about hard work and practice mm-hmm. and what it means to really, as you said earlier, hone your craft and then give it back to the Lord almost as an offering in that, which I think is cool. As you did that, and maybe you can give us a sense of time on this, what did that look like, that span of time up until you would receive what you would maybe describe as your big break?
Yeah, I mean, from the second that I started, I was like, you know, a Clydesdale horse with blinders on.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing existed but whatever that goal was. I mean, mm-hmm. the whole world could be falling apart. There could be an earthquake, and I'd still be drumming. I remember one year in my, 19 or 20, preparing for an audition for a group, a big-name group at the time, and I remember, like, practicing, you know, 12, 13, 14 hours a day preparing for this audition. And I remember practicing and I forgot it was even my own birthday. I mean, I didn't answer the phone. I didn't do anything because I was focused on that. So there's been a lot of hard work. See, the thing is, you can luck up and, you know, as somebody on American Idol, you can luck up and win and have a career for a minute or a year or two or three. But it's very hard to have longevity in any business, really, especially anything that's competitive, you know, like entertainment or sports or whatever. And so the thing is, I was always interested in the long-term vision of what I was trying to build. And you can't play like somebody who's 50 until you're 50. You might have a lot of talent and you might have a lot of, opportunities when you're young, but seasoning and wisdom comes over time, and you can't exchange the years for that. So I was interested in becoming a great musician and not like necessarily like a drum star or a rock star. Just I thought about, you know, the art and I knew that to be a great artist of anything required intense labor and intense focus. And I was willing to do that work. And I was very young at the time that I made those decisions. But as I look back on it now, it's like nothing worth building can happen quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. It's the way God made it. When God wants to grow an oak tree, he takes 100 years. You know, when he wants to grow a squash, he grows it over a summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anything that's really going to be substantial, and throughout your life, I feel God's trying to build something bigger than you can even see. And as you cooperate with the diligence and the labor and the willingness to partner with him, I wanted to represent God with excellence. And how could I do that if I wasn't giving my best to absolutely every part of my life?
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, there's a quote, and there's over 400 motivational quotes in the book. And the reason why there's so many quotes is because I've always loved the power of words. And I clung on to words as a young boy without a father. I always clung on to phrases and words that could help me believe in myself. But one of the quotes in there I love that just really sums up so many people in life, it says, the rarest thing a man or woman ever does is the best they can. the rarest thing we ever do is the very best we can. Because mm-hmm. you think about it, every single day, at the end of the day, can you say, I've given this day my absolute all. I've given my wife my absolute all, my children, my work. Mm-hmm. We leave so much on the table.
Yeah.
And so I figured life is so short. Why do I want to get to the end and go, you know, I didn't give it my all in all of these areas. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's just something God put in me. He just put this driving spirit that, like a Daniel, that I wanted to be excellent, but mm-hmm. not for my own sake, but to lead others into that place of excellence to honor God and be all that he created us to be.
Mm-hmm. So how did you, Zorro, because I know you talk a lot about, like you said, networking and how you know someone who knows someone who knows someone, and yeah. then you get this gig, and sometimes you do one-offs, and sometimes you're on tours, and yeah. you talk so much about studio recording versus live touring and all the different aspects to that, and it's just like dizzying. I don't even know. I mean, some people just like to show up and sit at a desk and know where they're going to sit
right.
every day, and you did not live that life
at all. Wild life.
It's exactly. It's a wild life. And how do you, in addition to doing all that and having to be your own CEO and your own marketer and stuff, as you made these decisions to join tours or to, you know, be back certain artists or whatever, did you have like a litmus test that you had, whether, I mean, were there moral conflicts that came into play as far as who you would choose to play with or not, or just time constraints, or how did you winnow all that out?
There were all of those things. I mean, ultimately, I always sort of, you know, if I knew exactly what God wanted me to do for every day of my life, I would just do that. But mm-hmm. since you walk by faith, you know, I ask him. And I'll just, you know, if there's an opportunity that comes up to play for somebody, I'll pray and say, Lord, you know, I'd love to do that gig. But if it's not your will, then shut it down. If it is your will, then open the door and then let me accomplish what I'm supposed to during my time with that artist or that season. I always look at every one of these things as like an assignment. And I always look at every gig and job and being in the business of people as like, the work of my Father is the work of people. God cares about people, and he's always going to use whatever gifting or skill or talent we have to connect to other people. You know, whether you're an undertaker or a drummer, mm-hmm. you're connecting to people. And so I always look at it in that sense, okay? This is not just a gig. This is who I'm going to meet on that gig. And for instance, when I was touring with Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, and Frankie's an American pop legend. He's got the biggest thing in New York, the Jersey Boys. And I prayed about that gig, and there was another gig with another real famous artist at the time, and I could have went either way. And I just felt like the Lord leading me to the Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons thing. Now, it was during that time when I was with Frankie that, not through the gig, but through people I met during that time, that I end up meeting my wife. And now we've been married for 17 years. So destinies change with certain decisions. And so the only thing I've learned to do is go, Lord, what do you want me to do and what jobs do you want me to do? And when I'm done, shut the door down. Or if I audition for something and I don't get it, just give me peace about it. I go for everything that comes down, the opportunities that seem like, you know, they're God-led. But since you don't have a written contract from the Lord saying these are the 12 I want you to do, you move by faith. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that whenever you make mistakes, and we'll never know what mistakes we made until we get to heaven, because you don't know when you said yes to this what you said no to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a different altered reality, right? So you're mm-hmm. like, which was this the right one? I'll never know. But I know that if we do make mistakes, that God just rewrites the script. Oh, Zorro missed it on that one. So we'll rewrite the future based on he messed up on all these 12 things I had for him. You know what I mean? But it's like that old game when we were kids where you draw on it and then you lift the sheet and then you draw a new picture.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of look at it like that. God just, okay, even right down to the last second of your life. He's given you this plan that he has, and you're following it completely by faith. But it took a lot of courage, actually, to meet people and to put yourself out there. It's not the talent. It's really the courage.
Mm-hmm.
It's the courage to just go. I was never afraid to introduce myself to anybody. I'd see Ray Charles at the airport and go right up to him and start talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
His entourage wants to push me away, but as soon as I start talking about music and I mention his records and I could talk about a certain lick on an album, he was like,
mm-hmm.
he wanted to talk to me. You know what I mean? So it's a certain boldness, but I think the boldness comes from God has given me this. He tells me to be bold. And when you step out in faith, that boldness is part of faith. It's mm-hmm. like you're believing that by being courageous, he's going to do something.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there some artists, though, that maybe, or and maybe there aren't, I don't know, are there some artists you wouldn't work with because of their specific message or, like, go on tour with or whatever? Just to,
sure. I you know, unless the Lord directly...
Did you tour with Marilyn Manson?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Oh, did I? Or
did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Marilyn Monroe, no.
You're not that old.
No. How do you know? I'm kidding. No, anyway. No, with... no, specifically, if I know a group is a totally demonic, devil-worshipping group that everything they represent is total darkness, I would probably say, no, I'm not into that. On the other hand, if there was a group that, you know, they were maybe into some dark things, but they really didn't know what they were doing, meaning it's just they're playing part of the whole image of the whole thing, and they're not, and I felt like the Lord said, I want you to be there. See, I've never been afraid to be around darkness because I realized that I am the light. In many of the situations I've been in my career for 30 years, I've been the only light that people have ever seen. Mm-hmm. I've been the only person who had enough courage to tell them the truth, to share the faith without worrying about what they thought of me. And I've always been a very radical evangelist. I mean, it wasn't uncommon that I'd be on tour with people. I'd be on tour with Lenny Kravitz, playing one night and speaking at a church the next night. Mm-hmm. and carrying around hundreds of books and Bibles to give out to people because I looked at that as a mission field. Mm-hmm. And the mission field also right within the band itself, the people in the band, the crew, the managers, just those were just people who needed to see light and see God's people, but not have me judge them, but just have me love them. Mm-hmm. And I found that to be super effective, and I was able to minister to tons of people that had I said, no, I can't be around any people that are less than perfect, yeah, then those people would never know about the gospel. Jesus, yeah, came for the lost, not the righteous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like you're in corporate America, you know, working with a bunch of people who are lost and doing a job and doing, yeah, that's, I...
Well, you nailed it right there, Lisa, because a lot of people think, when you work for a corporation, you know, there could be hundreds of people there. Mm-hmm. There's people into all kinds of stuff there. Mm-hmm. Just because they wear a suit and ties doesn't mean they're not doing all kinds of dark stuff. Mm-hmm. There's lost people. There's Christian people. You can't say, well, I'm not going to take a job at Apple because they're not all believers.
Yeah.
Then who are you going to minister to? Right. You're preaching to the choir then. So, but a lot of times in rock and roll, I'll get young people saying, well, if you're a Christian, how come you played for so-and-so? And I'll say, well, what do you do? And they'll say, well, I'm a plumber. I said, well, do you qualify them as being Christians before you return their calls, or do you just do the job you're supposed to do and mm-hmm. be pleasant while you're doing it?
Yeah.
We all have a job to do.
Yeah. So what, this is just kind of a question out of curiosity, what would you say are some of the bands out there today that are really displaying genuine talent? Like ones when, I mean, because you've been in the business forever, and if you were to just say, you know, some of the bands, mainstream, you know, otherwise, where you're like, these are not just a marketing ploy, these are some genuine folks out there playing good music.
I mean, there's tons. There's so many, you know, there's a difference between, like, you know, like a lot of the American Idol type of people that are just trying to be, you know, music stars for a minute. And there's a difference between, you know, people who have like a singing talent. There's people that fall in the category of great singers. Then there's people who fall in the category of bands. And then there's worship music. I mean, it's a long list. I mean, I think there's plenty of talent out there. Mm-hmm. What I think there's a lack of is people who understand what that talent is for. Mm-hmm. Like, in other words, they don't understand the purpose of the talent. Mm-hmm. See, the purpose is not just to get famous and to get rich. The purpose is, like, you impact people. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of it. And a lot of the people that I've met that are younger, they're still lost into the, I want to be a celebrity, I want to be a star, I want to be worshipped. But I've been around the people that are already worshipped and that are stars, and many of them fall to the wayside. Many of them self-destruct because they failed to acknowledge what the purpose of the gifting was, and just being famous and rich and good-looking was not enough to sustain life. So I'm more interested in, you know, whether they have talent or not, is teaching them, well, here's the purpose of your music. But talent is, there's never a shortage of talent in mm-hmm. the world. God has given so many people and musical gifts and talents. Now, not everyone will be known, and not everyone will be recognized, but, you know, I listen to a wide variety of music. I have over 10,000 CDs in my collection. And I have like, you know, thousands of iTunes downloads. So I just love music. Mm-hmm. I put on all kinds of music and music inspires me. And it doesn't have to be just Christian music. You know, all the notes belong to God. Whether they're Christian or not, the 12 notes on the piano, they're all God's notes. Now, the difference is, are you playing out of a heart of worship or are you playing out of a heart of worshiping yourself? Mm-hmm. Because God has given many men great songs to write that never served him. He wasn't going to take the gift back. And if they were faithful to develop that gift and turn that songwriting into something extraordinary, he would never take it away from them just because they didn't serve him. So to me, you know, God gives talent to all kinds of men. Yeah. The wise ones eventually try to figure out, well, what is this for? And where is the happiness going to come? The happiness is only going to come when you're really serving.
Yeah. I always like to kind of, you know, pick folks' brains when they come, especially if they're a few steps ahead of some of our audience, you know, many of whom are millennials, young adults. And I know you have Zorro International Ministries. You're very involved with the work of young adults and very passionate about that. And kind of my final question here as we wrap kind of ties into that, Zorro, and that is, why do you think so many young adults today have difficulty finding a sense of purpose? Why is there so just this struggle to make it through their 20s and 30s and find, whether it's in their career or whether it's in relationships or, you know, with Christ or without Christ, that sense of purpose seems to be so driving, but it's so elusive these days?
Because they live in a world where they're bombarded with false values and false sense of purpose, and they're bombarded by television shows that have no purpose whatsoever, not teaching anything, not showing anything. They see a whole world becoming celebrities by doing nothing. They don't exercise a skill or a gift. So there's a whole generation duped into thinking that there are shortcuts to this thing called life, and there isn't any. You know, life is a battle. Life is a struggle. And this delusion that it's anything but that is a false sense. So I think when people that are young experience all of these trials and tribulations, they think, what am I doing wrong? Because all these other people on TV seem to be just living the grand life, and they're missing it all because they're being bombarded with false messages. And the other thing is, they make their identity in what they do rather than in who they are. The minute we really believe that God loves us, that we don't have to earn his love, that he's created us for great things, that we already have his approval, as he already loves us. We're so used to performing for people in life that we can only be loved if we're famous or if we're rich or if we're good looking or if we have this position. So we're so used to a false world of false ideals that we don't really believe that God just loves us. If we really believe that, it'd be like getting a get out of jail free card, and then we could be free to be who he made us to be. And the other thing is to learn to live and not live for man's approval. If you live for man's approval, you'll always be, your chain will be yanked in every direction. I don't live for the approval of other people. There's a lot of people who judge me based on the way I look, and they don't approve me from just their first glance at me. And they, you know, but they, how can you tell what's in a man's heart? There's no way you could see what's in a man's heart based on his outward apparel. So to me, it's like this, the idea is to give your heart over to the Lord, and then understand and receive that he loves you. And then it's like you're not living for other people's approval, and it takes the pressure off. And then you know that he already said there's going to be trials and tribulations, but he said, be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. That's where my confidence comes from, is that I know that, yes, these things will come, these trials and tribulations. Jesus warned me they'd come, but he said with them I'd overcome them. But my identity is that I'm a son of the living God. I'm an heir to the throne of God. I'm seated in high places. And so I really learned to believe it. And then if I believe it, I'm not worried, because we spend most of our lives seeking the approval of other people who won't even be in our lives. And when we die, it is only God who's judging us. None of those people that we put so much stock in, of what they thought about us, mattered. My father-in-law always tells me something. He goes, you know what people are going to say about you, Z? I said, what? He goes, whatever they want. Mm-hmm. In other words, people are going to talk about us. People are going to think whatever they think. You just keep walking with the Lord. Mm-hmm. You just keep serving God. And I've learned it in my life that as I've made the priority of my life to fulfill my purpose in God, why am I here and what did you create me to do? And I'm willing to do that work. As I've done that, God has opened up all kinds of doors that other people try to keep shut. because he'll just go around it and he'll backdoor it. He'll cause somebody to have a dream and say, you know, invite Zorro, whatever, because I've made my priority his kingdom and his kingdom's people. So I think if the people are listening, whatever it is that you're doing in your life, make people your priority in that and not yourself, and God will elevate you.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, we've been talking to Zorro, folks. Again, the book is The Big Gig, Big Picture Thinking for Success. You can find out more about Zorro at zorrothedrummer.com. He's also on Twitter and Facebook. And hopefully we'll see you in our parts again sometime soon as you're traveling through all your gigs, your big gigs.
I would love to. Thank you so much, Lisa, for the privilege and the opportunity to be here and to share with your listeners. And I'd be happy to come back anytime. It was great. You had some very insightful questions, and you're a great interviewer.
Great to have you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Do it, Zorro.
Well, hello, everyone. We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have Chris Via with me in the studio. Chris, welcome.
Hey, Lisa. Good to be here.
Hey, hey. Chris is with our Focus Leadership Institute. He's been featured on the show before, and he's going to answer a question that we have that neither I nor Martha could answer because this was not our experience. So here we go, Chris. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Give it to me.
This listener is saying, what are the Christian views on joining Greek life? My college campus has a whole lot of options open toward being Greek and gaining more networking abilities. Is joining a Greek organization a bad idea, even when I feel like I'm pretty strong in my faith? Or could joining be a good idea for bringing people to Christ?
You know, Lisa, that's a really great question. And to the listener that asked this question, I totally get where you're coming from. I pledged a fraternity when I was in college and went into it with not the best mindset that I could have. I wish what I had done is made sure, and I'll give you a couple of these tips. I think the best thing that you can do is make sure you're going in with the desire to meet like-minded people. If you're the only one, if you're the only Christian going into any environment, whether it's a Greek house or an organization or anywhere, you're going to feel alone, and it's going to be really tough for you to hold on to what you believe. And so when you go into a Greek house, you're going to want to make sure that any of your pledge brothers or pledge sisters or people that are already in the Greek house have those similar mindsets, are already on fire for Christ. And you can find that out really easily when you're going through the rush process. You need to make sure that you're honest with yourself and honest with the actives in the house so that they know where you stand with the Lord. If you try to hide who you are, you're not going to be able to suddenly spring it on them when you're in the house. They're not going to like it that much. It's not going to be a good thing. So be honest with who you are. Be honest with your passions. Be honest with how much you love the Lord. And I think then your Greek experience could be much richer. Mm-hmm. I would also be very careful about going into the situation with the intention of saving people. Bringing people to Christ, I think, is the language that was used, not just in a Greek house, but in any situation. When you go in with, you know, your radar on who am I going to save today, that really, for me, I think it turns people off. And I don't know if that's really the best way to go into a situation like pledging a fraternity or sorority. These people could really be your friends for life. And if you go in wanting to convert them, and that's your only reason for pledging and joining that house, that's really not the best point of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Is there a danger in Greek life of it just becoming all-consuming or becoming, I mean, because it seems like what I've seen, you know, and like I said, I didn't have this experience in college myself, but it seems like it can be one of those things where, you know, it's almost like a blood brotherhood or sisterhood, and it becomes everything that the house is doing becomes something you have to make a priority and you have to and could potentially have to give up or be asked to give up elements of your faith or to, you know, not take a stand in things that you believe in as a result.
It is a very difficult environment. Mm. There are a lot of people who, for them, that fraternity or sorority is their life. It is the all that they do, and their expectation of you is that you will be giving the same passion to that house. So I think it's important that you put those expectations up at the front. Thankfully, the experience that I had was very balanced in the time I was able to spend with my fraternity brothers and the time I was able to spend doing stuff at my church. And every once in a while, the Lord would be gracious and those things would overlap. Honestly, that was very few and far between. But I did appreciate the relationship I was able to have with my brothers and the example I was able to set. The Lord gave me a ton of favor in that house in a lot of ways. That my nickname during pledgeship was Jesus Boy. And they really respected where I was coming from during my pledge process and gave me some room, which was nice.
Good. Well, great thoughts on a very practical question. So thank you to the listener who did send this in. And thank you to you, Chris, for weighing in from your own experience, as well as just a healthy dose of wisdom from being around college students pretty much all the time.
Thanks, Lisa. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Well, that is it for this week's show, everyone. Write to us at editor@boundless.org if you want your question answered on a future show by someone like Chris or one of our counselors or Candace or John Thomas. We have a wide array of folks who are willing and ready to weigh in with their wisdom. So that is it. This time around, make sure you're catching up on past shows and keeping up with the topics that we do discuss. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family. We'll be right back.